Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
You're listening to Hour Number 2 in the Doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Basketball's over. Hockey's over. Football season's like, you know, we got 3.5 weeks yet till SEC Media Days. Got OTAs wrapped up. Looking to see who gets arrested. It's baseball season. It's baseball season. Got a College World Series coming up this weekend, right? It's Father's Day. You got U.S. Open golf, NASCAR, baseball. It's where we're at. Kevin Rogers joins us. You want to make a couple of shekels on baseball? Check this dude out. He is unbelievable when it comes to baseball, and he is with VegasInsider.com. K-Raj, welcome back. How are you, man?
I'm good to talk to you again. I know it's a great time in sports talk radio.
Oh, this is like the best time. I'm eating up all of my – I'm working about 2.5 days a week right now. I got to eat up all of my vacation time. I think I've had three straight 3.5 day weeks. I'm off this Friday. Tomorrow we got afternoon baseball. And then I take a full week off before the 4th of July holiday, and then I burned up all my time, basically, and it's time to get going. So, yeah, this is that time of year. I remember back in the day when Neil Rogers used to take, like 9 weeks off in a row in the middle of the summer. You remember that? I don't know if you were in Miami back then.
I was, but also what's fun about him is he wasn't even a sports guy, so there's no excuse. I mean, sports, you have an excuse at least. You're doing a normal show. Always have stuff to talk about every day.
Yeah, you would think for sure. What did that game go off at last night, by the way? What was it? Was it 8, 9, 10? What was the line in it? 7? What was the line?
No, it was like 9, 9.5, depends on where you went. And obviously J.R. Smith hitting that three-pointer at the end screwed things up for people or helped people, depending on which way you looked at it. I mean, Steph Curry threw up a couple stupid shots at the end of that game. I mean, they could have just let the clock run out. And I don't really blame Cleveland for still trying to compete at that point, but for the Cavaliers, you know, there's only so much they can do, really, against this Golden State team. And for Kevin Durant to win the championship, where, you know, I wasn't really a huge fan of what he did personally, because I thought that he came so close to beating Golden State with Russell Westbrook. But at the same time, though, good for him. He got the championship, and now Golden State will be favored again going into next season.
I still think it's hollow. I said this earlier with Bo Estes from NBA TV, somewhere in the deep recesses of his heart, it's a little bit hollow. He joined the best team in basketball. I mean, he should have been back-to-back NBA champions. Let's face it. I think this is worse than LeBron, you know, going to Miami, as bad as that was. LeBron always said that last year's championship was the most meaningful of all of them. And I think for Durant, you know, he's the MVP, he's this, he's that, I get all of that, but it was like he went and played with the big kids on the playground, you know what I mean? It was already a foregone conclusion, it felt like.
It did, and, you know, I don't love where the NBA is going right now, Tom. I really don't. With these two teams going to the finals, it seems like every year. I mean, you never saw the Lakers and Celtics go three straight times in the 80s. And,
never saw anybody three straight times. It had never happened ever in the NBA. Yeah, when they had 10 teams, it didn't happen.
Yeah, and, I mean, at least in the 80s, I mean, you go back, you had the Sixers. You had the Pistons in the late 80s. You had the Rockets in the West. You even had San Antonio, Portland, Dallas were very competitive. Yeah. I feel like here it's Golden State, maybe San Antonio, Cleveland, nobody else. that's not fun. It really isn't. And maybe I'm different because I handicap every day and I follow the entire league throughout the season. A lot of people want to come to the party, you know, for the finals only, for the star power, for all these guys. But it just, for me, it's just not making the league fun. You know, even the Patriots, who are, you know, the dynasty of all dynasties, they were down 25 points in the Super Bowl. Yes, yeah. They made a massive comeback, but they didn't dominate the Super Bowl. They still had to make a massive comeback. So, you know, there was some kind of, you know, there was, you know, something they had to jump over. You know, there was something in the road they had to jump over. And I feel like for Golden State, if it wasn't for Draymond Green getting suspended last year, maybe they don't get Kevin Durant because they won't need Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I'm just looking. It's funny you say that as I look at the NFL futures versus the NBA futures. Right now, Golden State's 2-3. I mean, what value is there? 2-3 to win the championship for 2018. Cleveland is 3-1. And then not only does it jump to Boston and San Antonio at 12-1, which is a sucker bet anyway, but they go to 12-1. Houston is 20-1. The Clippers are 33-1. And then the Raptors and everybody else, 50-1 or higher. There are only six teams in the entire NBA that are less than 50-1. And I'm looking at the NFL odds right now, and only, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, only the Browns, Jets, Rams, and 49ers are more than 50-1. I mean, that's the you got one league where 28 teams are considered, you know, less than 50. 51 is a big shot. 50-1 or less. In the NBA, there's only six teams that are 50-1 or less. I mean, and really, there's only two that are less than 12-1. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, and also, you look at the NFL, and understandably, the Browns or the 49ers or the Jets or some of these bad teams or Jacksonville are not going to go to the playoffs. They're not going to win the Super Bowl. But we've seen in the past, what if one of them somehow goes 9-7 or 10-6 and they get in as a wild card where they have a shot? They still have a chance to win four games. It's very difficult. You're a 41-41 team in the NBA. You got to win 16 games to win the championship. That's not happening. It's just not. And the NBA is never going to do this. But you know what? If they had a best of one in the championship or best of one in the playoffs, that would make it interesting, like the NFL, because then you could say Golden State could be playing Portland or Utah. Maybe they lose one game and they're knocked out. And that's why we love March Madness. That's why we love the best of one format. The best of seven does not yield upsets. That's why the whole system is broken in a sense when you have two power teams.
Well, or at least go to back to a best of five in the first round or the first two rounds, because there's just no way that any 5, 6, 7, or 8 seed anymore, or let's say 6, 7, or 8 seed, can win four games against the top of the deal. But if you had where it was, go back to the best of five or even a best of three in the first round, all of a sudden there's an upset and you're on the ropes. You know what I mean? That kind of a thing. They got to do something, because best of seven all the way through, you get no drama at all. Zero drama.
No, well, there's no drama, especially when you have Steph Curry's an MVP, Durant's an MVP, Klay Thompson's an all-star, Draymond Green's an all-star. When you have all these guys, you know, when you go back to Dallas, for instance, when they played Golden State years ago and Golden State knocked them out, the Baron Davis, Steven Jackson teams, they were talented and Dallas was really good, but they were a deceiving 65 or 67 win team. Golden State wins 70 games in their sleep. You know that? I mean, it's just you know, it's not as narrow as it used to be, that the gap is so wide now from the 1-8 where it used to be. You know what? If you were an 8, you had a shot. You weren't that far off from the 1. But now you got no chance. You really do. And, you know, it's even worse in the East with Cleveland, because you say no one's been in Cleveland four times, much less maybe two times in a series.
Well, but yet they weren't the number one seed. I mean, that was the funny thing, is that they were a 23-24 loss team, whatever it was, and the Celtics were the one seed. You know, maybe they can get something going there. I don't know. But you talk about the NFL and you talk about, you know, the maybe factor. I mean, you know, all you got to do is go back to, you know, the first Super Bowl after the turn of the century, right? The Rams came off a 4-12 year, and they were playing a Titans team that was 8-8. They met in the Super Bowl the next year. You know, a 4-12 team, that would be like, I don't know, the Knicks or something going and winning the NBA championship next year. And there's just no way in hell that it could possibly happen. But yet, in the NFL – a 4-12 team 1 year can go to and win the Super Bowl the next year.
It can. I mean, even we know the circumstances with that Rams team. They got Kurt Warner, and just the offense was historic numbers they put up that season. And no one ever heard of Kurt Warner. That's not saying that, you know, Mitch Trubisky is going to do that for the Bears this year. Yeah. Or, you know, another quarterback is going to go to one of these teams. You know, it was still 17 years ago, 18 years ago when that happened with the Rams. But, yes, the NFL is what makes it exciting. And I understand the last few years you've had one seeds in the Super Bowl. You had Denver and Carolina. You had, you know, even though Atlanta wasn't a one, I think there were two last year. New England was the one. And you had Seattle, Denver a few years ago were ones. So you're always going to have the best teams in the end, but that doesn't mean that other teams – can't hang around. It's just the NFL. That's why the NFL is king, where the NBA, yeah, people are paying attention and they enjoy it because they like the star power, but there's really no drama. And again, going back to this, Draymond Green doesn't get suspended, Golden State wins three in a row probably. And it's as simple as that. And LeBron did a great job last year winning the last three, helping Cleveland win the last three. I mean, we always say it's him alone, but still, there was a circumstance there that helped that opened the door for Cleveland to stay alive in that series.
And I don't know who is out there that could help them now. I don't know what move. I don't know what stops Golden State short of a catastrophic injury. You know what I mean? To one of their big two or three guys. I don't know that there's anybody that LeBron can reach out and touch that could. You know, I mean, Kevin Love is. It's not really. It's a big. It's a big two maybe there in Cleveland, but the two are like three quarters of Kyrie Irving when he's really good and one quarter of Kevin Love, who gives you a great game every once a week, maybe something like that. So it's like, you know, for them to get another guy, I don't know who that guy is. I mean, I just don't know where is this other guy in the NBA that's available to go there and give them some kind of big lift you know, and make them great. You know, a short of Anthony Davis, maybe. And I don't see that happen anytime soon.
I mean, a guy like that, or I know he's not going to go. But like, if you threw in, like, let's just say we're playing, you know, fantasy for a second. A guy like a James Harden. If you had Harden, Kyrie, and LeBron. And I mean, the thing is, Golden State didn't add a piece. They added an MVP. You know, you could say,
they added their best player.
You know, the Heat added Ray Allen a few years ago. That's adding a piece to your team. When you got Kevin Durant, a scoring champion. You know, okay, maybe he's never been an MVP, but a scoring champion a few times, like, that's just, it's not even a bad game changer. It just changes the entire league because now no one else has a chance. You know, this isn't Kevin Durant going to Boston or Washington or someone else or Indiana or someone who was kind of competitive and now he's making them better. He made a 73-win team better who already broke an NBA record for most wins in a season. Like, it's just not even fair.
Yeah. Kevin Rogers with us, VegasInsider.com. All right, so we shift our eyes to baseball. And, you know, it's our daily deal, and there are great opportunities there day in and day out to handicap and to get a little action on these games. Having said that, there's obviously high drama with what's going on with Aaron Judge in New York and the Yank Aarons, as they call them, Aaron Judge, Aaron Hicks, Gary Sanchez coming along. It's funny because last week I said that if Mike Trout, or 2 weeks ago, whenever, before he got hurt, said Mike Trout played in New York, they would have already retired his number. You know what I mean? He would be in a Hall of Fame, and he would be able to continue to play. He's the same age, for all intents and purposes, as Aaron Judge. But last night in Anaheim, when Aaron Judge hits that two-run homer to give the Yankees that victory, the chant of MVP goes up in Anaheim. I mean, this is really something because it's happening in New York, but you add him to Bryce Harper and Chris Bryant and Mike Trout, and we're looking at where baseball is right now. You know, somehow, some way, baseball's got to figure out a way to capitalize on these stars that they've got.
They do, and when you mention those kind of names, Aaron Judge in New York, Trout in Los Angeles, I get it with the second team in Los Angeles, Chris Bryant in Chicago, these guys are in big markets. You know, this isn't trying to market Ryan Braun in Milwaukee. You know, like this isn't the case, or when Albert Pujols was in St. Louis. You know, that's not what it is. That these are guys in major markets. And Aaron Judge, I mean, you look at him, you know, big dude, has a lot of power. It fits the Yankees. He came up through the system where it's kind of like another Jeter in a sense. Obviously, you know, Jeter didn't have that power. But, you know, someone where they just sign him, you know, for $30 million a year from nowhere, that they brought him through the system. And that's what I think a lot of people probably like about that. And that's what they liked about Jeter, is the Yankees didn't, I don't want to say cheat it, because the Yankees can afford it, but at least they got their homegrown guy. And for Aaron Judge, he's going to win the MVP this year. He will, because as long as he keeps these numbers up, Mike Trout, we have no idea when he's coming back, and I don't see anybody else in the American League that's going to top those numbers. If this guy, as long as he stays consistent, he's going to win the MVP.
Well, if he keeps this up, I mean, he's hitting 342, leading the league in home runs, RBI. I mean, if he keeps this up, they will put the 99. They'll just tack the 99 up right there in the Monument Park, and that'll be the end of that deal. But you're right about the homegrown guys. This is the way the Yankees were built last time they got something going. Aaron Hicks was kind of a guy that they acquired, but, you know, is developed as a Yankee. Gary Sanchez is a homegrown dude. You look at some of these other guys, they made a great trade to get the Torres kid. We'll see if he's the shortstop in the future. Didi Gregorius, you know, scrap heap guy that, you know, has done really well for them, you know, post Jeter. So, and the thing about Judge, you make the Jeter analogy, is that he's just such a great guy. It's almost too good to be true. I mean, he's adopted. He's got parents. He's humble. He never talks about himself. He puts his head down and runs every time he hits a 500-foot home run. I mean, it's just he's like everything that they could ask for.
Well, and also too, for as much as the Yankees are disliked around the country because, you know, the evil empire, they spend all this money that, like you said, they're building around young pieces, and that they're not giving all these guys $25 million. And when you look at it, Jacoby Ellsbury got that big deal. He's hurt now. You know, so he's not even a factor in what they're doing. I mean, Matt Holliday, they got, as you know, pretty cheap at this point in his career, that they're not spending $25 million a player. I mean, really the one guy that's panning out at this point with all the money they spent on him is CC Sabathia. That right. Sabathia's pitched very well, and he's getting all that money right now, but he's almost like one of the last guys to do that. That you don't see a lot of these players anymore with the Yankees that are getting these ginormous contracts. They're not, and you know what? They're winning because of it.
Well, yeah, and I'll contend, having followed this team since I was a boy, the Yankees, they were hated in the 70s and into the 80s. They were acquiring players, the Reggie Jackson deal, Dave Winfield, everything else. They were and they were very much disliked. The Yankees of the first part of this dynasty, the pre-A-Rod part of this dynasty, they were hard to dislike because everybody was like, how can you dislike Bernie Williams and Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera and Andy? Everybody liked those guys, but it was Clemens, Giambi, A-Rod that became the evil empire again. You know, that became the hated Yankees again because it was those guys. Well, they're back to kind of, you want to hate the Yankees because they're the Yankees. You know, the old, it's like cheering for U.S. Steel. But how the hell do you hate Judge and Sanchez and Hicks and this group of guys, Severino and these other guys? How can you hate these guys? They're just such great guys.
No, you can't. And it's almost like the team that you would hate more would be the Red Sox, because they signed David Price to a big deal, and they got Chris Sale, and the Red Sox seems like are desperate to load up because they've struggled. And, you know, they had Price last year, and obviously he was hurt in spring training, and he hasn't been sharp this year. You saw the little blow up with the media after the loss to the Yankees last week. And, you know, I think people don't like teams that panic in a sense. Like the Cubs, why people were rooting for the Cubs is, you know, really a lot of their main players weren't big time free agent deals. Yeah, they signed John Lester to a huge deal, but they acquired Jake Arrieta in a deal from Baltimore that really no one noticed. You know, Chris Bryant, they drafted high.
Anthony Rizzo is one of their own.
They picked up in the Jeff Samardzija deal from Oakland, you know, so, and Anthony Rizzo that they picked up, really no one noticed it. So that's where I think that people like those kind of teams that, look at the way they're building, as opposed to, okay, here's a bunch of $200 million contracts for these players. We just need to have a quick fix. And those are the teams I think that end up being hated.
Yeah, there's no question. Kevin Rogers with us. VegasInsider.com. All right. Having said that, we're seeing teams that are, you know, continuing to play well, lap the field. What a game last night, though, for Atlanta in Washington, where, you know, you always wonder about this Washington Nationals team. They always get these big leads. They're so talented. And then you just wonder, you know, whether or not they get lazy or you know, or what the deal is with them. They've lost four straight games now, including that 11-10 deal, and that was Steven Strasburg on the bump against the Atlanta team, you know, that is well under 500, yet they can't win that game. I don't know what it is about the Nationals, but it always just seems like they can't ever hold it together.
Yeah, and I feel like for years they've never really found that closer, that, you know, the Papelbon thing never really worked out. You know, last year he had the deal with Bryce Harper, and, you know, I understand it's only a four-game losing streak in June, that it shouldn't be that big of a deal. But, you know, they lose this weekend to a Texas team that really wasn't playing that great, and I feel like the Rangers were cleaning up against bad teams, and they had a really nice sweep, and they had a good win at Houston last night. But for the Nationals, I think we talked about this last week or in the last 2 weeks or so, Tom. Teams like the Nationals and the Astros that are right now head and shoulders above the rest of the division, how do you stay motivated? How do you stay motivated against Atlanta on a Monday night? You know, how do you do that when you know if you lose, okay, we're still up 11 games in the division.
Right.
You know, what's the big deal? And that's where you just hope for Washington that they don't get into a 6 or 7 game losing streak and the Braves come back. The Mets are playing better. They beat the Cubs last night with Jacob DeGrom. They won 3 games in Atlanta this past weekend. All of a sudden, the Mets are kind of waking up a little bit. So, you know, if you're Washington, you want to make sure that you're not going to go through one of these losing streaks that all of a sudden now it's a 5 or 6 game advantage as opposed to an 11 game advantage. And now things are getting interesting in the division.
All right, finally, is it a little bit like the stock market? Do you look at teams, you know, the two teams in the World Series from last year have been underperforming. Cleveland's at 31-29, just kind of scuffling along, and even worse for the Cubs now as we go week in and week out. We keep saying they're a 500 team. They're 31-32, and they say they got guys that say, well, we're not a 500 team, but, well, yeah, you are. I mean, you're what your record says you are. You're 63 games into the season, and you're still a 500 team. Do you look for these teams going in either direction, whether it's Milwaukee to fall, whether it's the Cubs to get hot, the Indians to get hot? Do you look for those teams to start performing well and then jump on them and ride them like you would a stock almost, you know, in the stock market where you buy them low and just now ride them because you know they're going to go on one of these 14-6 type of runs and just play them on a money line every night?
You know, I look at Chicago, and they avoided the 4-game sweep against Colorado on Sunday, and they had a flat performance against the Mets. And I think they've lost now, I think it's 9 straight they've lost on the road, and they're favored tonight with John Lester on the mound. You know, you would think eventually they would turn it around, and I feel that way more. Maybe I'm buying into it too much with Chicago as opposed to Cleveland, that the Indians, I still look at them as a team that really – pitched well in the playoffs last year, but I don't really consider them to be that big threat in the American League. I just don't. That they're not getting the starting pitching past Corey Kluber, who just came off the DL. Past him, I don't see the other guys, Salazar, Carrasco, guys that really stepped up last year, I feel like aren't doing it this year. And that's where Cleveland, I don't know if you can get value on them if you just wait. But I think the Cubs, I'm thinking, okay, they got to put it together sooner or later. Where the Indians, I don't know if they're going to put it together. If they just had that one great run and then up 3-1 over the Cubs in the World Series, they lost that. If they just lost the mojo, they tried to get Edwin, or they picked up Edwin Encarnacion to give him more power. He started slow, picked it up a little bit, but I don't know if that's a difference maker. You still need the pitching, and I just don't think they have that past Kluber. I really don't have a lot of confidence in Cleveland as a team to win the American League again this year.
All right, man. As always, I appreciate it. It's great work. Kevin Rogers, check him out at Vegas Insider. He will help you out with your baseball picks. Get on that thing, jump on it, and play a little bit, get a little action going with the baseball, and he'll make you a few shekels, that's for sure. Okay, Raj, appreciate you, man.
All right, Tom. See you. Thank you.
By the way, Twisted said the Greek Freak will be a free agent after next year. He could put the Cavs over the top. I wonder, when does LeBron start to slip? You know, when does he start? I mean, he's already slipped a little bit. When does he really start to slip?
I think you'll probably see it the more times he has to go up against Golden State now that they have KD, because KD puts strain on him on both ends of the floor, and that's why you've seen him.
They got to manage his time, his minutes. He can't play the most minutes in the NBA like he did this year.
No.
But if he plays less minutes, I mean, he played the most minutes in the NBA and they were a 2 seed. If they manage his minutes and there's nobody there to pick up the slack, what are they going to be, the 4 seed? Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, you got to do something, but it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, because that clock has got to start ticking at some particular point in time. That competitive clock. Well, maybe he'll go join the Warriors, win another ring. All right, who would they play? If LeBron joined the Warriors, who would the Warriors then play? Would there be anybody left? There'd be like no team left. The Warriors would be like the Harlem Globetrotters. They'd just go around and play like the Washington Generals. They'd be the Warriors, and the rest of the NBA would be the Washington Generals. And they would just go around every night beating the snot out of the rest of the NBA, doing, you know, bucket tricks with confetti and string on the ball at the free throw line and bringing little kids out on the court.
And then they would just to keep up some of the intensity, they would get down a few points in the fourth quarter. Then they'd stop shooting with their eyes closed and one hand tied behind their back.
Yeah.
And finish it off, you know.
Dribbling around on one knee.
Yeah.
Wearing microphones, talking to the crowd. Come on, Cream. It's funny, man. Come on, man. Cream's over there. Hey, remind me later on to get into my Mount Rushmore of college football coaches because I got into an argument.
Uh-oh.
I need to get on Twitter and see what's going on. For some reason, I don't have my Twitter open, which is at Tom Abraham Show, by the way. I got into an argument about Nick Saban and whether or not he belongs on the Mount Rushmore of college football coaches. We'll develop that a little bit later in the show. That's part of that spackle I was talking about when we get through some of this stuff. When we come back, though, a Huntsville kid, a Buckhorn kid, has been drafted by his favorite team, the Atlanta Braves. The Kyle Wright story next, right here at 7:30. Not with Kyle Wright. We are working on that. But Alan Carpenter joins us next. TomahawkTake.com on 7:30, 103.9. Yep.
Now back to the big dog. This show is rough.
You know, old Roger and Belinda Wright got to be pretty proud of their boys. All of their boys. Mitchell, Trey, and Kyle. Of course, Roger, the baseball coach at Buckhorn High School, coached his son Kyle Wright there. He went on to play at Vanderbilt for 3 years as an All-American and was drafted by his boyhood favorite team, the Atlanta, I assume still his favorite team. The Atlanta Braves, fifth pick overall in the amateur draft last night in Major League Baseball. And joining us now to talk about that, a guy who's a real seam head and a real geek when it comes to this draft stuff, of course, our own Alan Carpenter from TomahawkTake.com. Carp, welcome back. How are you, man?
It's my favorite time of the year. Not any hockey to worry about, not any basketball to worry about, and we've got a draft going.
Yeah, we do have a draft going, and Kyle Wright, you predicted it. You called this shot that you thought that the Braves would select Kyle Wright, a guy who is relatively ready. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to pitch Friday night. I mean, it'd be nice if he pitched Friday night for the Braves, but I mean, this guy is not too far. You wouldn't think that he'll be too far removed, the 21-year-old kid, from when his time will come to get a shot at the bigs if he can do on a minor league level what he's been able to do in the SEC.
The comments from Brian Bridges, the Braves scouting director, were pretty telling here. He was talking about the fact that Wright's got a plus fastball, plus curveball, plus slider, good feel for his changeup, good command. When he's got all those things together, plus talking about the fact that he's fairly advanced for his age in terms of pitching savvy and such, that tells me that the Braves are going to give him every shot they can to get to the majors fairly quickly. He's 21 and a half years old and certainly has come a long way since he was in high school at Buckhorn. I like the chances that he may end up getting a good look in spring training. He may not make the majors quite yet at that point, but I think we're going to have a good shot at seeing him in Atlanta before the end of 2018.
Now, if we just look at the numbers, of course, you know, as a freshman, he's pitching midweek against, you know, Middle Tennessee and different guys like that, teams outside of the SEC. And then as he gets further along in his career, we get that he's getting the weekend starts and so on and so forth. But this year, The 3.40 ERA was his highest ERA in his 3 years at Vandy. The 5-6 record, he was 8-4 last year. Same number of starts, 16 starts, same number of complete games with one complete game. Now, his strikeouts were up. He is a strikeout an inning kind of guy, a little bit better than a strikeout an inning kind of guy. But what would be the explanation if some, a fan's just looking at the numbers in a press release and says, wait a minute, he was 3.09 last year and now he's 3.40 this year. His record went from 8-4 to 5-6, and he's an All-American this year.
It was basically coming down to the fact that he got started slowly this year by his own admission. Just didn't quite have it going right at the beginning of the season, but certainly came on towards the end enough that Baseball America had him ranked about fifth or sixth at the start of the season in January, and he was number two on the entire draft board for them. And number one for the Braves, of course, at the end of the season. So it was a battle of momentum and getting started and getting himself on track, and it certainly came on towards the end of the year.
He was all freshman his freshman year. He was second team All-SEC last year, and he was a preseason All-American and a first team All-SEC this year and a second team All-American this year. So he's certainly one of the top players in college baseball. There's no question about it. And how cool is it? I don't know if you've ever had a chance to talk to him. We're trying to track him down. But how neat is it in this case for him to be able to play for his boyhood team, the team that he pulled for his whole life, to be able to put that Braves gear on? It's got to be really something for him.
I have been watching the draft course since it started last night, and as well as been watching the draft reactions, where you see all these kids getting their name announced, and it's obviously a wonderful thing and a great honor for them. But you see a lot of the reactions being like, yay, I got drafted, that kind of thing, and like, yeah, you got me, and that kind of thing. The reaction from his family, his friends, his teammates, to everybody sitting in the room, if you haven't found or seen the video of that, it's like euphoric. That reaction in the room was a total celebration. It looked like everybody wanted to pull for the Braves to call his name, and that happened. And I'm really excited for the kid as well as for the Braves.
Yeah. Describe what kind of pitcher he is. Pitcher, thrower. Is this a guy, you know, 3-4 different pitches type guy, or is this a high heat guy? Give us a little bit of an idea, scouting report on him.
Well, that's part of the deal that makes him very close to major league ready. He could end up starting possibly as high as double A next year. He is sitting about mid 90s with his fastball. He has a good down action on his curveball. Nice slider as well. He needs a little bit more command or control to finish himself off, and might be able to get a little instruction from a guy named Chris Medlin on his changeup. I don't know, but we'll see how that goes. But he is definitely a guy who's got an excellent mix and all the pitches that you would need to be a reliable major league starter. He has been a starter last couple of years in his Vanderbilt experience. He was pitching right there in terms of stats with Jordan Sheffield, now a Yankees prospect, last year. And I'm excited for the pick because the Braves certainly had him number one on their board, right with the guys like Mackenzie Gore, Hunter Green, Brendan McKay, that were all taken in the top five. And it's a definitely a coup to get him at the fifth spot in the draft.
What happens next for him? Where will they send him once they get him signed? Where will he be shipped off to?
That's going to be an interesting question. Both the signing and the location. My suspicion is that he's already at least en route to Atlanta, if not already there, to meet with the front office and start the process of getting introduced to the organization and the team. His slot value in terms of the signing bonus is at $5.7 million. He probably will go a little bit above that, guessing somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 million, which is a obviously a big chunk of change, but it's also a chunk of change that the Braves are going to have to manage, because their entire draft pool for the first 10 rounds is only about 9.8 million, 10.3 max. So he's going to command about 60% of the draft pool right there. Once he gets signed, and I do believe he's going to get signed, they would probably assign him to Danville, their upper rookie team. And given that he's already pitched 103 innings this year, I imagine that he's going to get a little bit of action, but not too much so that they don't overtax him there. He'll get a full look in spring, as I suggested, and I imagine they would have him tapped for another 120, 130 innings for 2018.
Alan Carpenter with us, TomahawkTake.com, talking about the draft and the fact that Buckhorn's Kyle Wright was drafted by the Atlanta Braves. All right, obviously more picks that have taken place since then. You don't just build your team with a first-round pick. Give us a little sketch on the rest of the Braves' picks so far and any surprises that maybe have taken place so far in the draft, regardless of the Braves or anybody else.
Right. At this point, seven picks are down. There are 33 to go. But at this point, the second pick is an outfielder, center fielder type named Drew Waters. He's from Cherokee County, Etowah High School in Georgia. He is a high school switch hitter, power hitter type with some good speed. He profiles like Chipper Jones in terms of his hitting, but he's still a little bit raw, so that's going to take some work. But the interesting part about him is that his dad is a former offensive lineman, and he may have still some growing to do. Who knows? He might turn into a version of Aaron Judge or Kyle Schwarber in terms of his size.
As a second round pick.
So it's be interesting to see him.
Yeah, Next, third round pick is
Freddie Tarnock. He just started pitching a couple of years ago, and he's from Florida. He throws already in the mid-90s, and he doesn't even know how to pitch yet. So this is certainly a high upside guy that might be very interesting. Fourth round pick, Troy Bacon. He's originally out of Tampa, profiles as a closer type. Fifth round, Bruce Zimmerman. Now here, starting in the fifth round, the Braves have started going for college seniors. And the reason for that is because they can afford to pay them less, basically, so that they can afford to have the money to get Kyle Wright and Drew Waters under contract. So that's the purpose there. Bruce Zimmerman, however, still got some upside because he struck out 112 and walked only 11 as a junior at Mount Olive University of North Carolina. Sixth round, Jordan Rogers, the University of Tennessee third baseman, all SEC guy. He was also their top hitter as a senior, hit 322, slugged 512 with nine home runs, only struck out 30 times in about 229 plate appearances. Last guy so far, Landon Hughes, a right-handed pitcher out of Georgia Southern, also a senior. He was their closer, got eight saves, 43 innings pitched, 55 Ks, and only 16 walks with 172 batting average against. So even though these guys are being picked starting from the fifth round in order to save the Braves some bonus money, they all have some high upside, and who knows, may surprise.
Well, at what point in time do guys go to school, though? And you know, when are we looking at, you know, you talk about the kid that's pick number two, or the second-round draft pick for them, you know, I would assume that he'll take the money and forego college. But at what point in time are they picking high school guys that might end up, you know, passing and going and taking their college scholarship?
Well, I'll give you one example. Apparently, Tanner Burns from Decatur High School here in Alabama has told teams that he is intending to go to college because he's right now the number one guy on the board in terms of ranking that has not been drafted yet. So sometimes you get guys like that, and Kyle Wright was one of these two, 3 years ago, where he was telling teams that he'd rather go to Vanderbilt. Sometimes you can get out ahead of that and tell teams that you just don't want to be drafted and would prefer to wait for your day as a pro to come later. Yeah. Some of these kids now are – You've got things like injury cases. There's a kid named Tristan Beck out of Cal Irvine that looks like he's going to have a medical issue with his back. And I can't recall whether he's been signed or, excuse me, drafted yet or not, but he was falling quite a distance in the draft order. He was originally a first-round talent. Now, whether he will sign wherever he's drafted is another big question. But it comes down to expectations versus realities. If you expect first-round or second-round money or something like that and you're not getting it as a high schooler, then certainly you might want to choose to go to school. Another quick example is Jason Hirsch, now in the majors with the Braves. He was selected as a starter out of Oklahoma. Oh boy, I may get this wrong. I think it's Oklahoma State. A few years ago, as a high schooler, and he chose to pass up on a $1 million bonus. He ended up getting $1.4 million, I think it was, out of the Braves, or perhaps even a little bit more than that. So he bet on himself, and it paid off. But sometimes these things don't work. So it's a bit of a dice roll for some of these guys.
Yeah, I remember when Sonny Gray came out of the Murfreesboro area, and he had, you know, originally out of high school, was drafted, you know, in the seventh or eighth or ninth round, something like that. He passed, went to Vanderbilt. 3 years later, came, you know, out in the draft again, and he was the number 5 pick overall by the Oakland A's, or number 8 pick overall, something like that. So a lot of times, similar thing happened with David Price, another Middle Tennessee type kid, where you know, they went back in and you'd be shocked what 3 years in baseball and college baseball could do for some of these guys, where all of a sudden they go from being, you know, a mid-round pick to being a mid-first-round pick, which is obviously a huge difference in money, plus they got their education.
Yeah, the real trick is, as a pitcher in particular, you're rolling the dice a lot with your health, because you never know if you've been doing a lot of travel baseball or area code baseball, whether you're going to continue to have your arm and your health going for you. If you end up with a Tommy John surgery at the wrong time, for instance, then there goes your chances at a big bonus. So it's just a matter of whether the family decides that what's right for the kid. That's basically what it comes down to.
All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Tremendous work. And Alan Carpenter's been our guest. We'll talk on Thursday about the Braves. Of course, exciting game last night, but we'll get caught up on the Braves on Thursday. It'll be a big baseball day for us Thursday.
Sounds great. Thanks much.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, let's get a break. There you go. You got, you know, we're just humming along today here. Humming along. We'll come back with more right after this. Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039, The Ump.
Are you ready, Alabama? It's time to enter the doghouse.
Tradition Tuesday in the doghouse. Every Tuesday we give you a great one of the great traditions in sport. It's U.S. Open week. Let me drop a little knowledge on you for U.S. Open week and a little bit of tradition. Oh, it's not that kind of tradition. It's a little bit of manouche. It might be a little manouche. But anyway, it is U.S. Open week. So I figured that for our Tuesday tradition today, what's up with 18 holes making a round of golf? I mean, what the hell is that? 18 holes. Why? Why is it 18? Well, this is a tradition that dates back to 1764, when the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews cut the number of holes from 22 to 18. Oh, yeah. It used to be 22 holes. I mean, what would be a good score for 20? What's par for 22 holes? Like 87 or something? I don't know. Prior to this, a golf course could be composed of any number of holes. But after St. Andrews went to 18, many other courses then followed suit. And then in 1858, St. Andrews officially stated that 18 holes makes a round of golf. And the rest of the sports, rest of the golfing world fell in line with this thinking. And that was the end of that. You know, there's these courses now. T-Mac, are you a golfer at all or what?
Not really. I mean, I will, but I'm not very good.
What about Cream? Does he play golf?
Yes, he does.
Does he? Has he ever played a 12-hole course? That's a thing now. 12-hole golf courses. We got one not too far from the Hacienda. We got one not too far from the Big Dog Chalet here. Winchester, Tennessee.
Is that like 3-on-3 basketball?
It's a goat track is what it is. But yeah, it's like 3-on-3 basketball. Another 12 pretty good holes. Scenic View Golf Course. But there's more and more because, you know, we're in this age in society where we just don't have time for anything. Who could take 4.5 hours to play a round of golf? Let's play 12. It's very odd. But it's a course my son learned on, and he thinks it's normal. All right, coming up next, Greg Wyshynski puts a bow on the NHL season right here on 730-1039.
They are WUMP 730 and 1039. The Ump.